Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to the official Redbird Rants podcast. This is episode 39. I'm Michael Miles, one of the editors at Redbird Rants, and I'm joined tonight in this episode by one of our contributors, Larry Levin. And Larry, how are you, sir?
I'm doing just great, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
And a happy Thanksgiving to you. And Larry, you and I are joined tonight by a very, very special guest. Our own editor at Redbird Rants, Tito Rivera, is celebrating the big 27 years old today. Happy birthday, Tito, and welcome to this special pre-Thanksgiving Day episode
of
the podcast.
Happy birthday, Tito.
Yes, thank you, guys. Appreciate it, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Hopefully, the Cardinals can bring us some joy over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and let's, you know what, guys, let's go right into it. But let's put a little pause for a moment. Before we went on the air, we were talking about some Thanksgiving traditions, and I'd like to hear from both of you if we can just do that. Just give me what is your favorite Thanksgiving tradition that you do in your family, and let's start with you, birthday boy.
Wow, okay. Well, as you guys know, my heritage, my Puerto Rican heritage, offers probably a little bit of a different taste for everything. So what we usually like to do is play some dominoes and play in group in pairs. So about four people, but split off in pairs, and then we go ahead and feast on what we our traditional meal is not necessarily a turkey, but an oven roasted pork shoulder. With a special kind of rice and some Puerto Rican stuffing. So now, you know, with my wife, she's a full-blood American, so our house now has to adapt and fuse together at the same time.
Yeah, I love that. I love the melting pot of America, and when our families come together, how we can really meld together and the traditions. Larry, what do you guys do?
Well, for we have a small family, and so rather than cooking, we have found a place to go on Thanksgiving that is kind of well associated with St. Louis history, and it's called the Lemp Mansion. And the Lemps were a brewery family in St. Louis. Most Cardinal fans probably know, and it's supposedly haunted by one of the historic events there, where one of the Lemps died under very mysterious circumstances. The mansion was built in the 1860s, so it's about 150 years old, and it's just beautiful. It's broken into three levels and a bunch of rooms in a very labyrinthine kind of layout, and they serve family style at your table, and it's with fireplaces in most of the rooms, and it's just a very warm and wonderful kind of place to celebrate along with dozens of other families. What about you, Michael?
That sounds really wonderful, Larry. My family, we do two things that are pretty standout. One of the things we do, we just finished doing tonight, and that is we all come over to my family's house, my parents' house, and we do what's called Pie Night, where all of my soccer team of a family, my kids, they all get to make their own pie, and they get to make whatever flavor they want, and they make it tonight. We don't eat them tonight. We eat them tomorrow, but they all make them tonight. And then tomorrow, my parents will come out to our farm, and we'll have a mix of traditional fare with turkey and dressing, And then we mix in something different every year. This year, my wife has decided to make chicken fajitas. And so we'll have that along with the traditional American turkey fare.
Nice.
So let's get into it. Something that we could really be thankful for as Cardinal fans would be the landing of Giancarlo Stanton, and I'm sure we're going to get to that. But before that, I'd really like to talk about Yadier Molina. And Tito, you really brought up your Puerto Rican heritage. And as a matter of fact, Yadier is going to serve as the manager for the Puerto Rican team in the Pan American Championships. Let's just get your feedback on that. We'll start with you again, Birthday Boy, since this is really your neck of the woods. What does this mean in the grand scheme of things for Yadier, and what does it mean to you?
You know, I'll start what it means to me first. I think everybody knows what's going on in the world with Puerto Rico and the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, and I think everybody understands that there's a really dire situation going on in the island. You know, whatever you feel is actually happening or what's not happening, you know, I can tell you firsthand what really is happening, and it's not going well. It's not going well enough, I should say. You know, at one point my grandparents had power, then they lost it again. Then there wasn't clean water. You know, then they're running out of food, and our families here in the United States, you know, my mom and dad are sending food to them. And I think people can't understand the reality of what's going on in Puerto Rico, because either A, they're too politically wrapped up in all of this, or they just don't really care. And that's unfortunate, but at the same time, there are people still suffering. And you know, what it sounds bad with what my grandparents are going through, but there are people that are going through way worse than what my grandparents are going through. And so this, to me, you know, much like we say, like music helps everybody heal and whatnot, sports does that for Puerto Rico. You know, baseball teams, anytime a national team from Puerto Rico can lift the country is right there with it, because the country understands that this doesn't happen every single time. There's not a lot of opportunity for, you know, a Puerto Rican national team or individuals to represent their countries and be on the international stage. And so for me, it's a sign of pride. It's a sign of unity. And I think that's where a lot of the players are going to draw their strength from. And that's where I'll lead into Yadier Molina, what this means for him. I mean, look what he did, you know, in the last two iterations of the WBC, the World Baseball Classic. He takes Puerto Rico to two finals, gets two silver medals, all honors teams. I mean, the guy is the only person I would ever put in charge of any Puerto Rican national team at this point. And that's crazy, because you think of all the players right now in the major leagues that have some star power, and that includes Carlos Correa, and that includes Francisco Lindor. It included Carlos Beltran up until, you know, this off season.
Yeah.
But those before him even don't, you know, besides Roberto Clemente, he's in his own category, but no other Puerto Rican player has the fame and the star power that Yadier Molina has. And so I think he sees this as an opportunity to really, you know, bring some pride to Puerto Rico once again. But at the same time, I think he's also thinking about his life after a playing career, and that is as a manager at some point. And this is a perfect way to get that experience. I mean, it's a under 23 team. And which, by the way, I want to includes Delvin Perez from the St. Louis Cardinals, so our recent draft pick out of Puerto Rico. but this is a chance for him to prove that he can do it outside of his playing career. And I'm excited to see where it takes him.
All right, Larry, how do you feel about this?
Well, I mean, I echo, even though it's not a personal family thing, I echo everything Tito said about, you know, the disaster in Puerto Rico. And, you know, without getting in any way political, I'll simply say, you know, for us to crises are times when we really find out the true character of what defines us collectively and what brings us together. And I think we are being tested now with the crisis in Puerto Rico, not to mention the other serious consequences of the hurricanes of the past year, but especially in Puerto Rico. We're being tested to see if we can, you know, define ourselves collectively as Americans in a very important way. And so I hope we can, you know, go from where we are at the present moment, which is a very, very dire situation and a very tragic situation, to something where we can look back a few months from now and say that we were proud to do something, you know, on behalf of our fellow citizens. So that's my feeling there. You know, I was very, very blessed to be able to see the World Baseball Classic, both in San Diego and Dodger Stadium. So it was a wonderful experience. And, of course, I got to see both the Dominican – I mean, both Puerto Rico – well, and the Dominican Republic, but I got to see Puerto Rico and the United States play many times. And that final game, which, of course, was very emotional for me, you know, as a Cardinal fan, you know, there was a little part of me you know, cheering for Yadi, but mostly I was cheering for the United States. But it was wonderful to see, A, to see Puerto Rico there for the second straight time, and then B, even though the final itself wasn't a great game, to see how both teams got there. And, of course, both semifinal games were great games. So that was fun for me. As far as Yadi, yeah, I mean, he's an icon. He's a symbol of not only sports in Puerto Rico, but the country itself. It will be so interesting to see if he can evolve and develop into a manager after his career is over. He obviously comes from a family that has, you know, collectively higher baseball IQ than probably the rest of the planet combined. You know, sometimes it works out that way, sometimes it doesn't. When I was writing for the Riverfront Times about hockey years and years and years ago, you know, and the Blues had just given Brian Sutter his first chance as a National Hockey League coach, you know, it took him some time to figure out how to translate his on-field intensity to the dugout and managing his players. So, you know, even the best and most intense and most intelligent players sometimes have a growth curve. But I think if you're looking for somebody who defines leadership, you cannot find anybody more qualified than Yadier Molina.
Yeah, and I, you know, let me say as an aside that the thing that really speaks volumes to me, and both of you spoke to this, from Tito's perspective, you spoke of how sports has a way to take our mind off of the bad. It's an escape, especially in Puerto Rico. And it's the same here in America, because we definitely saw that after 9/11, when baseball finally returned, things of that nature. But then I also... it resonated with me what you said, Larry, about we are being tested, and this is a time when we as humans have to come together through our humanity, and we're seeing that whether that is happening or not happening around the world, specifically in Puerto Rico, and just the way that we are presenting ourselves externally beyond the borders of our own country. But then I thought about the marriage of both of those things. And I think that the example that we're seeing here with removing Yadier from the equation, the Pan American Championships that are coming up, it's a fantastic thing. And it's very similar in nature, while not exactly the same as the World Baseball Classic, But it is a way that a group of disparate people come together to play a single sport for one concerted outcome that, yes, they're all fighting toward, but yet there's civility. And I feel that way every time that I watch the Olympics, which, by the way, are coming up as well. And I'm just reminded that we can, as humans, and I don't want to pontificate too much here, but if we can, as humans, really push towards a goal, have opposition to that goal, and not demoralize or lose the fact that these are fellow humans on the other side. And that, I think, is very, very, very telling.
Yep.
As to Yachty becoming a manager, God, I hope so. And I would be A-okay with it if we had a press conference in January where he's replacing our current manager. That's, of course, not going to happen, but I would be okay with it. In fact, I'd probably be ecstatic with it. We know that is his future. Without a doubt, that is his future. And, you know, with Benji having served in so many coaching capacities after his playing career, you know, I may be wrong, but I don't know that if Jose is doing anything coaching-wise. But
he actually is joining Yadier Molina at the Pan Am Games.
Oh, nice.
And also, as a side note, and I was going to mention this, Jose Oquendo is joining him. So I find that both of them, Molina and Oquendo, going – is really, really interesting in the grand scheme of things, it's much to your point about whether Molina would just have a press conference and say, yeah, I'm taking over in January.
Yeah, and listen, hey, I'm way on board for that because, you know, I was somebody who was very upset when Oquendo wasn't the one who was selected when Matheny was, equally as upset that Francona was not selected and it had come down to Matheny and Francona. But Yadier is the future of the club. And when I look at that, I mean, you already have a player manager on the field behind the dish whenever he's suited up. And as a matter of fact, if you watch, what's even more interesting to me are the games when he is not suited and behind the plate, because he is absolutely a resource that every pitcher comes to, that every batter comes to, that Carson Kelly comes to, whoever it is, Alberto Rosario, if God knows, if anyone knows who that is. You know, when he comes up, when those people come up and talk to Yadier, you can tell that's a manager. And that's what this club needs. They're probably going to need it in 1 year, probably going to need it in 2 years. You know, I just don't know how many more years Yadier has actually on the diamond just in his age. And remember, he is playing the most difficult, physically difficult position on the field, seconded very closely by the pitcher. And so you just have to look at that timeline. And I would love to see Yadier as the Cardinals manager, keeping Oquendo in some very large role, bringing his brother Jose, bringing Benji back, all these things. I mean, it would just be a dynasty that could be made and had with the Yadier, with the Molina family and the St. Louis Cardinals. That's my takeaway. So let's do this. We're going to take one quick break. When we come back, we're going to just dive right on in to the Giancarlo Stanton cornucopia on this special pre-Thanksgiving Day episode, episode number 39, the birthday episode of Tito Rivera. Stay with us. You're listening to the official Redbird Rant podcast on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back. Thanks for sticking with us. You are listening to the 39th episode of the first season of the official Redbird Rant podcast. This is a very special pre-Thanksgiving recording and made even more special by Tito's birthday. Happy birthday again to you, Tito, if there's any listeners just joining us now. If you missed anything before, we had a really fantastic conversation about humanity and about Yadier Molina and his taking on a managerial role in the Pan Am game. But let's go to what everybody is dying to talk about, and that is the National League Most Valuable Player and the rumors surrounding him and his potential to come to the St. Louis Cardinals. Guys, the last that we heard, the last that has ever come out, is that there seems to be two front runners in the Giancarlo sweepstakes. Those front runners are the St. Louis Cardinals and the San Francisco Giants, rivals going into postseason, rivals who switched off who was winning in what year. Interesting that they're going head-to-head. And actually, the latest news said, sources say that the San Francisco Giants are the front runner. So let's start with you, Larry. Give us just your stream of consciousness on Giancarlo Stanton and the latest news, and go.
I just can't figure. I can't figure out anything. I mean, one day, you know, there's a package speculated that the Giants are offering, and the next day that package is denied by other, you know, sports writers who are equally credible. It's really hard to get a bead on, despite very generic statements about who the front runner is, it's hard to get a bead on what the actual offers are, which is, you know, really a testament to, you know, the Marlins playing it close to the vest. You know, the other thing is, you know, I think it's been speculated that the Cardinals could be used by the Marlins to drive up the price for a party that hasn't really entered the sweepstakes seriously yet. It's been speculated that the Giants could be used to drive up the price for the Cardinals. So there are as many permutations as you could even imagine out there about what might happen. Tito and I both speculated about the timing of when a deal would be had. I think we both thought it was going to be a few weeks off from now.
About mid-December.
It's a very complex landscape because you know, the Marlins have to decide, you know, how much do they want in the way of prospects? How much do they want in the way of ditching salary? Are there other players that they'd like to ditch? It was discussed that Dee Gordon was possibly a ditch that the Giants might take, and it was speculated that Brad Ziegler was a ditch that the Cardinals might take. You can imagine how many different considerations there are on that front in terms of what the deal could look like. You know, and then, of course, the piece de resistance is once that is once a deal is even tentatively in place, you know, it has to be sold to Mr. Stanton himself, who has a no-trade contract. So lots of moving pieces. I was asked at my pickup basketball game what I thought. I said then, and I say now, I think it's roughly a 50-50 proposition for the Cardinals. And I don't mean 50% Cardinals, 50% Giants. I'd say 50% Cardinals, 50% everybody else, because I believe that the Cardinals have it in their wherewithal if they want to make a what I'd call a bad offer, just for shorthand. In other words, an offer that could wow the Marlins, you know, beyond even considering any other offer. The Cardinals have the assets to do so. They have the money. They have the new TV contract. They have an exceptionally deep minor league system at this point. And so I believe, for one of the few times in recent history, this is the Cardinals' deal to lose. I'd say it's in their hands more than it's in any other team's hands. And I will say this about the Giants, real quickly, before I turn it over to Tito. The you know, the Giants lost a hell of a lot of games last year. What'd they lose? 98 games last year.
Yeah.
You know, you can argue that the Cardinals are a couple of pieces away from contending at a fairly serious level. You may not make the argument that they're going to be one of the three best teams in baseball, but if you add a reliever, if you have appropriate pitching depth and you add a Stanton, you know that they're there to play with the big boys. You can't make that argument with the San Francisco Giants. They have Buster Posey and they have Madison Bumgarner and they have some other decent players like Brandon Crawford, but really, you know, they lost 98 games. They had some injury issues, no doubt, but they're not there yet. So even though Stanton's from California, you know, I think the Cardinals are closer to competing. We know from reading quotes that Stanton wants to compete. And so I think we present a very viable option for him. And so, you know, I'm modestly bullish at this point, understanding the rug can get pulled out from under us, but modestly bullish.
All right, Tito, your turn. Boy, that was great, Larry. I mean, you pretty much nailed a lot of it on the head, but I do want to point out one thing that you kind of skipped over in regards to the Giants before I get into my take on all this.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that the Giants also don't have any pitching outside of Madison Bumgarner.
That is true.
Matt Cain is there. Jeff Samardzija, and maybe Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija are good enough, but Jeff Samardzija is not the pitcher that he was.
No.
He did not have a good year. Johnny Cueto, while he is staying in San Francisco, also is starting to show some signs of rust as well and some tear. So I'm not convinced that adding Giancarlo Stanton to the Giants is the best move for them in terms of, well, yeah, that's going to push us over the hump. Because not only that, then they still have to go get somebody to play center field. Denard Span can't do it. Hunter Pence is pretty much, you know, he's finding his glory days behind him too. So, you know, the Giants are, as you mentioned, Larry, a lot further away from the Cardinals in terms of competing with the upper echelon of the National League. And not to mention, look at the division that he would go into. You've got Arizona, who is a resurgent team.
Right.
And
right.
Also the Dodgers, who just were in the World Series. So you mean to tell me that he's going to have more success there? I find that really hard to believe. And don't even get me started about the Giants bullpen, because they're just as bad as the Cardinals. So, I mean, it really comes down to me whether or not Stanton sees it the way we do. And if he doesn't see it that way, then he's going to go to San Francisco or he's going to go somewhere else. Now, what I think has been interesting over the last couple of days, and I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but in my eyes, the St. Louis media, and I should say, you know, Bernie Nicklaus and all those guys, they have really picked up their, you know, wording towards Stanton, saying, hey, if you want to win, you need to come to St. Louis. Have you guys noticed that?
I mean, I have. I think there was a really good article today in STL Today or the Post-Dispatch by Jose de Jesus Ortiz that made that very argument about why it would be a really smart move for Stanton to come here, you know, both for the on-field and off-field stuff, both for the on-field chance to compete and the off-field of being basically an icon in St. Louis for the next decade.
Right,
I wondered if it was – I worried it was hyperbole, but I'm glad to hear that someone else did not think that way. And, I mean, honestly, I'm very relieved that both of you sort of picked up on that as – more of a push to get him than hyperbole, because my biggest fear was that it was just hyperbole.
But then you also take into account what Bernie Nicklaus even said himself. He had his own article pretty much saying the exact same thing of, he wants to win, then why not come to one of the most well-known franchises in the National League, the one of the most, if not the most successful franchise in the National League? Why not come to St. Louis if you want to win? I mean, unless he's just saying that to say that because he can, you know, because he has all the power in his no trade clause.
Right.
You know, but this is where, if he wants to win, I'm going to echo their sentiments and say, this is where he needs to come to play. And that's not because I'm just a Cardinals fan. It's just that logical to me. So I echo those sentiments, but here's the thing that really, really bugs me about this entire thing. If I were the Marlins and I had the reigning NL MVP, and I know, you know what, his time has come in Miami, I need to trade him,
you could not pay me enough money, or I could not give him enough for the return that I want. If I'm the Marlins and I'm not getting the return in prospects I want, I'm not trading him. I'm not doing it. I won't entertain an offer that is not good in a return for prospects. Otherwise, you know, this is, and Josh and I had this conversation. This is the exact reason why he wasn't traded in July and August, because nobody wanted to pay 100% of that. So it's clearly not all about money. It's something else, and that is prospects. Anything the Giants, whatever the Giants offered or what we reportedly saw, you know, Joe Panic and Two Top, that's not going to cut it. And the Cardinals could beat that 10 times over and over again if they wanted to.
Yep.
So I struggle to see people on Twitter like, oh, the Cardinals aren't going to do this. No, I really think they will do this. I really think the Cardinals are going to step up. Now, of course, hindsight will be 20/20, and people will say, oh, no, you overpaid for that. Oh, well, this, and oh, well, that. I'm like, you know what? Screw you guys. Because you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, you made that point last week. I agree with you. Yep.
Right. You cannot have it both ways. You can't say the front office is cheap and then criticize them for going out and overspending. Like, that's not going to work. If you guys want the Cardinals to win, buck up and be ready for some massive prospect offload. But if I were the Marlins, that's what I'm saying. I have the reigning NL MVP. You show me the money. And the money isn't necessarily the money aspect. It's what you can give me in return for prospects. And you know what? I don't care if the Giants can pay 100% of the contract. That's okay, cool. So could the Cardinals. I guarantee you they could. But again, if that was the case, he would have been traded in July. I can almost guarantee that.
Well, absolutely, because it's not about money. I mean, everybody has made that very clear. So, Tito, what would you offer to the Marlins to get him? What would it take?
You know, we're going through this mock exercise, and unfortunately, the other day we kind of got rebuffed on the trade that we supposedly we thought we had made. And so, you know, the offer that we just accepted to get, you know, Giancarlo Stanton was Jack Flaherty, Austin Gomer, and Harrison Bader for Giancarlo Stanton, Adam Conley, and 90% of his pay. And I don't think that's, you know, that's not what it's going to be in real life. I think personally, in our mock draft or off-season mode here, I personally think that we still win this because we're getting what we need. However, if this was in real life, I'm in Marlins GM mode or Derek Jeter's mind. Again, I want as many pitchers as I can get. And I think I would probably be asking for a combination of Flaherty, Alcantara, and probably a little bit lower level pitcher, and Harrison Bader. I think it's going to take at least four players to outbid other teams in terms of prospects. And then at the same time, they're going to have to take on some money. So those, you know, four players and approximately 85% to 90% of the pay.
Larry, what would you give the Marlins?
I would give the Marlins whatever the thing was that was exactly that much more than what other teams offered to get them, but to get him. I mean, obviously you don't know that, and it's a guessing game. But the point I'm making is the Cardinals in this offseason don't really have a choice other than to make a sensational move for an offensive player. You know, they could They could add a Yelich, but he is not the difference maker that they're talking about. He's a really good player, don't get me wrong. A really good player. They could add an Ozuna who has more pop, but it probably isn't as predictable as a Yelich. But they've put themselves in a sticky situation. I mean, not only because of their pronouncements, but because they've missed out over and again, right? They've missed out on Price, and they've missed out on Scherzer, and they've missed out on other players. Now, sometimes they've been fortunate. You know, they didn't do the big contract for Hayward, and that was a good call. They didn't do the big contract for Pujols, and that was a good call. But it doesn't matter anymore what they didn't do. You know, what matters is, you know, are they going to be able to add somebody who not only is going to be a difference maker, but who's going to make virtually every other player in the lineup that much better? And there just aren't that many of those out there. So to answer your question very specifically, Michael, whatever it takes. And I don't know if I think it'll take four, like Tito said. I think it will take two pitchers. I think it will take a position player. I'm not sure whether it will take Harrison Bader or not. You know, it might take, you know, the two top pitchers and then two lower prospects. I don't know. But I think this is the year where they really have to soul search and say, you know, we're willing to go for the perception that we lost this deal, that sports writers are going to, you know, are going to read about this deal and say, you know, we think the Cardinals got hosed, and they have to be willing to accept that, you know, to have the team on the field that can compete for the next at least half decade. That's my opinion.
Hey, and one quick thing I want to add in here is I struggle with the comparison to the deal with Pujols because, correct me if I'm wrong here, but when the Pujols deal was made, he was 32 years old.
Absolutely.
Practically 5 years, pretty much 5 years older than what Stanton is right now. So anybody
at least
saying,
people don't agree on how old he really is.
Right. So anybody that tells me, oh, well, he's not Pujols. Well, no. Nobody was Pujols. I mean, Pujols is arguably the greatest right-handed hitter this generation of baseball has seen. Arguably. But at the same time, you're paying for a person that is 5 years younger than the guy that you would have had right now.
Absolutely.
And so, to me, there is no comparison because of that age difference and what he could mean to the team. Because think about it this way. Let's say, for some reason, and this is where the Cardinals need to be careful because of this opt-out clause. Let's say that he does opt out. He's going to be, you know, 29, 30 when he does that. And at that point, if he does opt out, somebody else is probably going to want to pay him $400 million. And the Cardinals don't have to do that. They can get short-term success with Stanton for the next 3 years. It's just how far are they willing to go? And saying whatever it takes, while I agree to it to some degree, I think that is the biggest problem that this front office has, is that they are so smart about their short-term and long-term assets that they can't say, I'll do whatever it takes. Because they know at the end of the day, their long-term success is way more important than a short-term success. Because let me put it to you this way. Royals win in 85. 30 years later, they win again. Do you really want to see the Cardinals go 30 years without winning a World Series? Absolutely not.
No, but
and
can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Can I ask you?
I wasn't alive in 85.
No, and I was.
Larry and I were.
but here's the question I have, is who is there on the horizon, you know, who could serve as the kind of anchor for the offense, you know, other than this guy. I mean, you know, I think, you know, just as Pujols was a once-in-a-generation guy, and I'm not saying that Giancarlo Stanton is or isn't Albert Pujols. I'm not making that point. But I think we can fairly well agree that if Giancarlo Stanton stays healthy, you know, he should have at least, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of pretty reasonably high quality, high power, high difference-making, you know, presence in this lineup. If we don't make this move, and I didn't start out this offseason in favor of this. I was much more of a, let's get a Yelich or Ozuna and slot him in. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, they probably will find prospects within their system or other systems, you know, who could do that. But where is there the kind of prospect, you know, in their system or others right now that can emulate what he's capable of doing? So that's the reason that I say, you know, go big or go home, because it's just so different than I think what other folks offer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and again, this is why this to all of this point, this is exactly why I am saying that if I'm the Marlins, I don't care what anybody else offers me.
Right,
I want
right.
whoever has the best prospect.
I want
because,
who I want. Yep. Yep.
Right. That's why I'm saying, like, all this talk about the Giants, oh, they'll take on all this money, blah, 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 blah. Then why didn't you do it back then? Oh, well, they're
right.
not going to win. They're not, and again, you know, they're not going to turn their season around from 98 wins. But my point is if you could have taken on the money, then you would have done it at some point. But you didn't do it because you don't have the prospect demand that the Marlins are asking for, because there's only one team realistically at this point that can handle offloading prospects, and that's the St. Louis Cardinals. And that's why I'm saying, like, that's why I don't understand why there's so much hype around the Giants and the Marlins. Now, I get it that Stanton may want to play for a West Coast team or a Coast team in general. But, again, I will go back to it. The Marlins, everybody wants to say Giancarlo Stanton has all the power. That's not true. The Marlins have just as much as power in making a deal with the team. Giancarlo Stanton can go up to them and say, you need to trade me to the Giants. But the Marlins don't have to do it. They don't have to do it.
Yeah, and I think what people forget is the one thing that Stanton does have control over is he can say an agreed-upon deal. But as we have kind of tossed around in our Twitter group, if he were to say no, the Marlins could also put a lot of pressure. I don't know, in the book, have to play. His no-trade clause does not protect his playing time. It protects the place that pays him a check. Now, I don't think they would do that with such a high-value player, but they might. I have a follow-up, though, for both of you. And this stemmed – my question comes right out of this mock winter meetings that Tito and I are involved in. And it also goes back to your point, Tito, of if I'm the Marlins, I'm not making any deal except for the one that I want in terms of prospects, which, by the way, I completely agree with you. And also, let me say, Larry, I agree with you too, but I wasn't going to go the Price is Right $1 bid of I just want to be $1 higher than the next guy. But I do agree with you. I think that you just – the direction is you're going to go – guns a-blazing to beat out whoever the top runner is. Here's my question, guys. In the mock winter meeting, the individual who's portraying the general manager for the Marlins, the way that it went down between us, and Tito has been the big negotiator on this one, and kudos to you, Tito, for the great job. But the interesting thing that happened was just in the last day or two, I believe. But originally, the Marlins were only going to give Giancarlo Stanton, and it was what they could get back for Stanton. Well, then suddenly this third team came into play, which Tito and I nixed pretty quickly. But then another interesting wrinkle happened, and that was this idea that the Marlins would send to us another player.
Uh-huh.
In addition to Stanton. And ironically, in the real world, we've seen some of those rumors sort of trickle out. You know, who else would come with Stanton? Well, that begs a point to me of why would you, if you have the power stance that the Marlins have, of I'm not going to take any deal except for the one that gives me the prospects I want, why are you offering anyone else with Stanton? What do you guys think about that?
I'll answer this one first. It all depends on the player that is being offered. In the terms of this mock draft, the second guy that was offered to us is pitcher Adam Conley. He's a left-handed pitcher. He projects as the number three starter for the Marlins next year. And I can't remember if I said he was left-handed, but he is a left-handed pitcher. And so I think in terms of why you would give another player away is because, one, you don't see any value in him on your team anymore, and it might get the other team to take the deal. In my perspective, the way it went down was this guy wanted three top pitching prospects, and I said there's no way in hell the real-life Cardinals would ever trade three top pitching prospects. I don't care who you are. There's no way that the Cardinals would ever do that. So I said, you know what? No. You can have two of them, and you can pick which of the right-handers you want, Jack Flaherty or Dakota Hudson. And so he went with Jack Flaherty. And then obviously threw in Austin Gomer and Harrison Bader. But again, you would trade somebody that you see that does not have any value on your team anymore. And the reason I took this deal and I think we took this deal was because, one, the Cardinals don't have a left-handed pitcher in their rotation at all. Two, he supplants Austin Gomer's left-handedness. Austin Gomer might have a higher ceiling than Conley, but still, it's a left-handed pitcher. And three, Conley has big league experience at this point. And while, albeit it's not great experience and has not had a lot of success, he has pitched to big league pitching or big league hitters. He knows them. And I think a change of scenery would do good. And on top of that, he's not a free agent until 2022. That doesn't really mean much in real life, but in the terms of money wise, you know, he's under team control and arbitration for the next 4 years. And it would make sense for the Cardinals to do that. But for the Marlins to move somebody else, you'd really have to look at the player that they're moving. And if it was a Brad Ziegler, it's all about money. It's all about moving extra money.
Yeah, and let me also add that Conley in the mock world, and also in the real world, Conley's cheap. He is dirt cheap. Like you said, he's arbitration
minimum.
The next 4 years, and he's league minimum. And for us, he really projects to be a number five starter, but again, he would be a left-handed number five starter or a number four starter. And you know what? I'd put him, and I think you and I talked about this, Tito, I'd let him and Wainwright battle for a spot any day. Wainwright may win it, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, I'm totally fine with that. But in the real world, and Larry, I'm sorry, I'm going to step on your toes just a little. I'm going to go ahead and answer this from my perspective, then I really do want to hear your perspective of it. But I find it really interesting that the Marlins are putting additional names with Stanton, only because that sort of says to me that the Stanton ask only was not getting enough interest or was turning people away by the high level of the ask. You know, in a negotiation world, if you have the upper hand, and certainly I would say that the Marlins would have it with Stanton, that enough people were calling, I think they weakened their stance when they said, we'll put someone else in. That's my takeaway. What do you think, Larry?
Well, two different kinds of players being thrown into the deal, right, as you guys alluded to. One would be the One would be the guy that's actually useful who doesn't cost a lot of money. The other is the salary dump, like has been discussed with Ziegler or D. Gordon. Now, as it turns out, I think Ziegler, who didn't have a great year last year, you know, has had, you know, in the context of what he's been asked to do, you know, has had a stellar career, right? I mean, this is a guy who has performed in so many bullpens in so many effective ways, really up until last year. So, you know, a guy like that, even though he costs, you know, 1 year of $8 million, you know, could be useful for the Cardinals and, you know, doesn't cost anything beyond next year. So I think that's a useful kind of player. You know, obviously a D. Gordon is a much more expensive proposition than a Brad Ziegler. You know, if the Marlins really believe they have to offer, you know, somebody who is affordable, you know, to get people interested in Stanton, I'd be surprised. I don't really think that they think that the deal is going to turn on whether somebody gets an Adam Conley back or not. They really don't. You know, if you were talking about somebody who was a proven commodity, who was cheap, you know, that might be a different story. Conley looked like he was on the rise for 2 years, and then, my goodness, he had a dreaded 2017. What did he have, mm-hmm. like a 6 ERA or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 6.17.
Yeah, so I mean, I just don't think that's going to be a make-or-break thing, or that the Marlins think that they have to throw that in. I think they'd be much more interested in ditching salary. You know, now there may be people that the Cardinals are interested in. You know, maybe they're interested in a Conley. Maybe they're interested in a Kyle Bearclaw, right? But I don't think the cheap player is really going to make or break the deal.
Great points, everybody. Let's do this. Let's take one really quick break. On the other side of the break, we've got just a couple of minutes left, and I'm going to get you each to predict what the Cardinals do if they do get Stanton and what they do if they don't get Stanton. So stay with us. This is episode 39 of the official Redbird Rants podcast on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for sticking with us. We are wrapping up the 39th episode of season one of the official Redbird Rants podcast here on Blog Talk Radio. And what I'd like to know here in the last couple of minutes, and literally we've got about 4 minutes, give me your prediction of what the Cardinals do if they get Stanton and what the Cardinals do if they do not get Stanton. Let's start with you, birthday boy.
Okay, so what happens if they do get Stanton? Well, obviously that means the prospect, you know, farm system is going to be depleted a little bit. And I think at that point, the Cardinals are going to continue to look at trade options to find their closer for next year. We've seen the name Alex Colomay come up. I think that's what's going to end up happening. I think the Cardinals will go after him and see if they can sign or if they can get Alex Colomay from the Tampa Bay Rays. And, you know, I wrote a column about it, and I said it would probably take a combination of Austin Gomber and maybe Randall Grichuk or Stephen Piscotty. And so I think that's where it's going to go. Let's say they don't get Stanton. Well, the obvious answer is they still have to find a bat. And I still think that they're going to go, you know, outside of the organization in a trade to do that, and they won't go to free agency for it. And I really think they're going to probably end up going after Jose Abreu. I know he's not been a name that's talked about a lot, like Josh Donaldson. I just don't see the need for Donaldson. You know, I mean, I know there is, but I don't think the Cardinals are willing to give up a boatload of prospects for a one-year rental in the hopes of signing him. This isn't, you know, I know Josh Donaldson isn't Jason Hayward, but that's it. Now, assuming that they do trade for Jose Abreu, who is cost effective, that's when you'll see the Cardinals go after somebody in free agency for a closer like Greg Holland or Wade Davis.
Excellent. Larry?
I agree about Abreu. I hope to God they don't go after Carlos Gonzalez. I think it's a terrible decision. I hope they don't go after Eric Hosmer. I think it would be a bad decision. I don't think there are a lot of good choices in terms of hitters, but I do agree with Tito that Abreu is probably the best of the choices out there. Assuming they don't go after one of the other Marlins outfielders. And I think they will proceed with exploring both trades and free agent possibilities for closers. And I think they will do a couple of non-roster invitees to spring training for back of the rotation kind of starters.
Okay, well, guys, we could probably talk for 6 hours about Giancarlo Stanton and not really cover all of the ground. So I appreciate all of your feedback and everything that you shared. Let me give you my predictions really quickly. First off, I think the Cardinals will absolutely get Giancarlo Stanton. I just don't see it happening another way. I will be very honest. I'll be very disappointed if it does happen any other way. I think that, like you said, Larry, I think they've got to go with full guns blazing, and I don't know that they have any other options. So I'm going to say they land Stanton. I'm going to say then that makes, you know, Grichuk and Piscotty very expendable, and I think that they, like you said, Tito, I would love to see them go after Colomé. I've written about him as well. I think he's a great one. I will add another name to the do-not-touch list, and we've had an article published on our site about him, and that is Logan Morrison. That is a gigantic mistake. I hope that we're smarter than that. But I definitely see us doing that. What I find very interesting, I want everybody to keep this on the radar, is the Cardinals, through Rule 5 draft, we've left open a spot on the 40-man roster. It's full. We've got 39. We've got a 40th spot that is vacant, and that is sitting out there. If the Cardinals, within the confines of the Rule 5, find someone that interests them that they can pick up, and they've also left that vacant for a free agent laying out there. Outside of that, then you get into the issue of the Cardinals needing to complete something through a trade because of the stocked full 40-man. But I think that one open spot is very interesting. And, you know, they had 5 spots to play with. They filled 4 of them. Definitely tells me there is a plan in place for that final spot. Don't know who that is, but it's very, very, very intriguing. So keep your eyes open for that. As we close out tonight, just want to say thank you to all of our listeners. On this, our time of giving thanks, we certainly do that at Redbird Rants. We don't exist without you readers and the listeners to these podcasts, and we want to thank you for that. And then definitely internally want to give a huge bout of thanks to all of our contributors, represented tonight by Larry. You guys are the best, and Redbird Rants would not be in existence if not for all of the dedicated writers who provide content for us daily and keep Tito and I busy. What a great group of guys, and we really, really appreciate them. Tito, we've got about 1 minute left. I want to give you, Birthday Boy, the floor to close us out on this 39th episode, let you share some thanks, anything that you want to give us. You've got 1 minute. Have at it, my friend.
Awesome. Yeah, I do want to re-echo Dr. Miles' sentiments about, you know, our writers. They do a great job. And, you know, I'm coming up on a year writing with Redbird Rants as of January. And it's been one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever gone through. You know, I've been a lifelong Cardinal fan. And to be able to share opinion and share banter with a common group of people, with their love for the St. Louis Cardinals is a great experience. And I just want to say one thing about the off season that I think people need to remember. Be thankful for what this front office does for the St. Louis Cardinals. They do a lot of they do a lot of frustrating things at times, but they also keep in mind the long term success of the St. Louis Cardinals. And I think that's something that we all should be thankful for. And if they are able to land Giancarlo Stanton, you know, that will be just the tip of the iceberg of what is to come for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Well said. Thank you for listening. Thank you guys for joining. Have a great Thanksgiving, and check us out next week when we return with another podcast. Go Cardinals.
Happy Thanksgiving.